Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 11:59 a.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time, and well, sorry, Pacific Standard Time. And today is November 6th. I thought I would kick off today looking at oil because it's down $1.20. It gives us a really good example of a failed upside break, and that the dynamic of the failure was greater than the dynamic of the breakout. And it came right back down and tested the lower side of the range. That's almost a rule of thumb that we talk about at the chart seminar. So now the big question is, this is a potential area of support. It's at the psychological $70 level. It's at the lower side of the underlying range. It's in the region of the trend mean. So this is a potential area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. But in order to clearly demonstrate a return to demand dominance, we're going to have to see some evidence that someone else shares that view, and a clear upward dynamic will be required to check what has been an unrelenting decline since the beginning of October. Well, this is also a major trend inconsistency, because we've had a $15 decline. The biggest decline that we've had in over a year has been a $10 decline. Every time one of those ranges was resolved on the upside, the price rallied by approximately $10 as well. So not only did it not rally by as much on the breakout in September, but then it fell more subsequently. This is a major trend inconsistency. It suggests at the very minimum that we're going to be in for a much choppier environment on crude oil over the course of the next few months, potentially even years. And of course, all of that is happening with against a background where there really is a very high probability that oil prices are going to range in a volatile manner for perhaps the next decade, considering that the long-term history of oil prices is that they do tend to go through these extraordinarily lengthy ranges, which are then followed by very emphatic breakouts that, and then almost decade-long advances. Well, considering that we've had a decade-long advance not so long ago, then the most likely scenario is that we could be ranging for a prolonged period. But of course, that range over the long period is going to be punctuated by some rather significant bull markets, and arguably we've just had one. So this is a particularly important time where oil prices really do need to bounce, or we'll be talking about the medium-term uptrend since at the beginning of 2016 having been broken. So this is very important here, from not only from the perspective of producers, but also from the perspective of consumers. On the other side of the equation, you have natural gas prices. They're a tiny bit softer in here today, but they have rallied rather impressively over the last few sessions to push right up and test the upper side of what's almost a two-year range. Well, there's just simply not enough of natural gas in storage ahead of the winter season, and just the first cold snap has ignited speculative interest in the potential for natural gas prices to move higher from here. Well, there have been occasions in the course of the last decade where we've seen spikes in natural gas prices, and that they have generally petered out around $6. But considering that the price right now is at $3.50, well, then the upper side of that range does look rather distant from current prices. That's probably where the upside potential is if we do in fact get further into the winter and there is not enough natural gas in reserve. Well, we have the midterm elections in the USA today, and we'll have results tomorrow. And ahead of those results, Wall Street has been reasonably quiet. The S&P 500 hasn't quite been able to hold all of its advance. There has been a significant rebound from the lows put in at the end of October, and October was certainly a torrid month for stock markets. But again, when we pull out and look at the weekly chart, well, we can see that the S&P has now unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. And again, this is another example of a market with a failed upside break, where the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, and it came right back down and tested the lower side of the range. And now we need to see additional evidence that support is starting to come back in here. The certainly it would help to support confidence if we had a higher reaction low. That would be certainly a benign outcome. If the market pushes right back up above the trend mean and then finds support above it, well, then that would be doubly positive for sentiment. But there is the other point is that it really does need to hold the lows. And most particularly, it needs to hold the 2500 point level. Part of the reason for that is if we look at the log scale chart, but not simply over the last 5 years, but let's go all the way back to 2008. We can see that there have been a number of pullbacks, but in terms of percentages, this one looks so far reasonably similar to what we saw in 2014 and 2015. There's certainly evidence going on right now of a rotation, and the rotation is clearly favoring companies that have got strong cash flows. Well, of course, part of the reason for that is because they're defensive, and there is certainly I was at the gym this morning, and someone else who also has a history in the financial markets said, "Well, should we just sell everything?" Well, that's also a reflective of just what kind of environment we're in right now, where there is a great deal of fear because we've had these very swift pullbacks. And most particularly, we've had swift pullbacks in the shares where people have had large positions. And that's particularly the case for Amazon. Just about everyone I know has got a position in Amazon. Now, the big question for Amazon, it's exactly the same question we have for the S&P 500, is whether it is going to be able to push back above the trend mean, but most particularly, is it going to hold the 1500 point a dollar level? If it can hold the $1500 level, well, then we can conclude that this is certainly a medium-term correction, but that the price has been able to sustain the higher level, and then I think people would start to be a bit more confident. But President Trump is talking about antitrust, and to a company like Amazon, antitrust really is almost like kryptonite to Superman. So that's certainly a threat to their business model. And I think that is part of the reason why people are expressing, I think, angst at the speed with which the price has come back. The other way of thinking about it is that Amazon has pulled back like this on a number of occasions previously, but on each of those other occasions, it bounced, and it needs to do that again, not least because the price had accelerated higher. Bull markets don't end with a whimper, and considering the fact that the news relating to Amazon was not especially bearish, that people are probably thinking right now, well, it's probably representing some value. I wish I'd been able to buy it at $1,500 previously. Of course, a lot of other people will have been stopped out. So there's definitely people sitting in cash right now. There are people starting to look at this as a more of a risk. And what that suggests is that we're going to see some ranging. And then the question is whether that ranging is going to represent a type 2 top with right-hand extension, or a type 3 top, which would be ranging time and size, or whether this is going to be a consolidation within the incredibly impressive bull market. It is too early to make that judgment just yet. There are mounting threats to Amazon, but it is still a business that is expanding and that is certainly part of just about everybody's, not just their portfolio, but their lives. So this is, I think, a critical juncture for the share, and how Amazon performs is likely to have an influence on the outlook for the stock market. But then when we think about what's going on with Apple, well, Apple has come right back down to test the region of the trend mean and the psychological $200 area. It's above the trend mean, whereas the S&P and Amazon are below it. It really does need to hold that $200 area if the trend is going to remain reasonably consistent. And so far, it has steadied, but there has been a clear absence of, or a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics. Then when we look at the kinds of companies that are doing better, well, you have, for example, Nestlé. And Nestlé is one of those types of companies that has got very a long history of raising dividends and very strong cash flows, and that has been rallying over the course of the last few weeks. Then you have companies like Coca-Cola, which is at a new high. Then you had Procter and Gamble coming through with strong earnings last month and coming right back up towards its highs. But of course, all of these companies are those that have got long records of dividend growth. And usually, dividend growth in excess of the rate of inflation, although that is not specifically the case for Procter and Gamble. Now, one of the other points that I've highlighted previously is that there is a certain quality to a lot of these high dividend growth companies that when their yield gets up to about 3.5%, that's when people start buying them. We definitely have evidence of that in Procter and Gamble. And when we look at, for example, Coca-Cola, well, then we also have evidence of it there. 3.5% is where people start buying it. And this is equally the case for a lot of these consumer companies that have got these long histories of dividend growth. So Pepsi, for example, didn't quite get up to that level. But again, it's there seems to be a magic number to 3.5% for a lot of dividend growth type companies where people kind of consider them as value. Well, there is the additional reason why people are starting to get interested in these, and it's because treasury yields are at 3.2%. This range that we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks is really doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. That we are in the process of putting in a first step above this base formation, and the base formation was 7 years in the making. Then, when we look at the longer term trend, the breakout above 3% is certainly meaningful. The more history we look at, I think it is increasingly clear that definitely the yield has been moving higher from here. Now the big question is whether when credit conditions tighten up further, when credit conditions get to a point where they are representing a threat to the economy, well, will the yield then hold the 3% level? That's the really big question. That's where we would have absolute clear evidence that we're in a new secular bear market for bonds. Bond total returns have been trending lower for almost 3 years, so at least 2.5 years. And as long as they are encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, well, then this is going to be a supply-dominated environment. And that represents a really quite a significant threat for a lot of balanced portfolios. So they are going to have to start thinking about what do you own if your bonds do not offer stability. Well, the Bank of Japan and the Swiss National Bank have both been buying the shares of companies that have got real-world businesses, and they are buying shares of them because of the reliabilities of their reliability of their cash flows. And I think that that is really not a bad strategy if one is trying to hedge against a potential secular bear market in bonds. Well, then let's take a look at what's going on in the gold market. Well, gold prices were a little bit softer in here today, but this looks like a little first step above that little base that we saw in August and September. Quite clearly, the sequence of lower rally highs since April has been broken, and it has unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Well, it really does need to push back above the trend mean in order to really clearly signal that we're getting more than short-term demand dominance in the lower side of this range. There have been a number of occasions over the course of the last 3 years where the price has bounced from the $1,200 area, and it has done so once more, but it needs to push up and out of this range to really confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. And when we look at the gold bugs sector, well, gold shares are still not performing. They have paused, but they really do need to push back above the trend mean to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And palladium has paused in the region of the peak that we saw earlier this year. But it is quite overbought in the short term, so it's not so surprising perhaps that we do get some pause and consolidation in here right now. Now, the other commodity that is really starting to stand out here is cobalt. Cobalt prices have pulled back rather violently from the $95,000 area to $53,000 yesterday, and they're at $55,000 in here today, so they have bounced by $2,000. Well, that's not yet an upward dynamic, but there is news in the market that Glencore has realized that some of its cobalt supply is radioactive. And that's not especially good news for the share. What is perhaps more interesting here is that Glencore had really quite an impressive advance from early 2016. Then we've had this loss of momentum since the end of last year. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now we're getting a period of right-hand extension, or what is effectively a first step below the peak. Over the course of the last 6 months, and now it is weakening once more. Well, there is the potential here that Glencore is going to break down below the 300p level, and really a sustained move back above the trend mean is going to be required to question that potential. That this does not look like a bullish chart, and considering the fact that the two metals, or I guess the two resources that have really been propelling Glencore higher were cobalt and coal. Well, the coal market is still pretty steady, but cobalt has been pulling back, and if they can't sell their cobalt, then that could be bullish for the cobalt price, but not especially bullish for Glencore. So there's certainly all to play for in terms of the price. But when we look at some of the other miners, well, BHP Billiton has bounced from that 1500p level. It's now pressuring that sequence of lower highs. This is the level at which it needs to demonstrate that it can push back up and through that sequence of lower highs to demonstrate more than short-term steadying. But I think a lot of investors are going to be looking at that 1500p level. Now, when we spin out and look at the technology sector, well, then the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is unwinding its short-term oversold condition. But that is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and we had a significant loss of momentum, so we have a type 2 top in effect. It absolutely needs to push back above the trend mean to question supply dominance, not just over the short term, but over the medium term. What I find interesting is that despite the fact that the computer game companies are not even remotely affected by the semiconductor companies, they have been pulling back rather sharply. And we also have the failed upside break for Activision Blizzard, and it has broken its progression of higher reaction lows. It really does need to bounce and bounce emphatically if we're going to see some repair of the bull market going on here. And it has been a pretty similar story for the wider gaming market. But Take-Two has been able to push back above its trend mean. It was in negative territory in here today, so I think there are questions about whether it is going to sustain that move. But we have had a significant loss of uptrend consistency for these shares. They really do need to bounce, and certainly the potential is that esports is going to be a major revenue generator for computer game companies, but then the question is potentially maybe not quite yet. Now, when we look at what's going on in China, well, there is a lot of speculation about whether there is going to be a trade deal or not. I'm rather skeptical about the extent of any trade deal that is agreed, but the A-share market has returned now to test the lower side of that overhead trading range. When we look at it on a weekly basis, we can continue to see that there is still a sequence of lower rally highs. And there is also a short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean, so we may get an additional rally. That would certainly question the consistency of the downtrend, but it has some work to do here to really confirm more than short-term support in that 2500 point level, which represents the upper side of the base from back in 2012 through 2014. What I find rather interesting is that it's the Shanghai property market or index has pushed back up into its overhead trading range, and it is now pressuring that 6,000 level. So we have again here now we have a failed downside break where the dynamic of the failure is at least as large as the dynamic of excuse me of the initial breakdown. Now the question is whether it is going to be able to push above that 6,000 level and through the trend mean to break the downtrend. But certainly there's been a loss of momentum. Then the renminbi has also been a little bit steadier in here. Of course, it is steadying in the region of that big psychological 7 level, and it is really quite oversold relative to the trend mean. So we may get some additional ranging in here, but China does not want a stronger currency. Then India has seen the rupee rally over the course of the last four sessions, and it was relatively steady in here today. Now, this is beginning to look like a loss of momentum for the dollar, which has been rallying very persistently for most of this year against the rupee. Then that is holding out the prospect of a reversion back towards the mean. And that should be generally positive for the Nifty index, which has bounced from that psychological 10,000 level. We do have a spike on the Nifty chart in the chart library, and our IT people are working on that to get that removed and fixed. But I think the broad pattern here for the Nifty is that it needs to push back above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. Then when we look at what's going on in South Africa, the South African rand has been steadying up over the last few sessions, and it is coming right back down now to test, or the dollar is coming down to test the 14 area. This is also unwinding the oversold condition for the rand against the relative to the trend mean. And 14 represents a rather significant potential hurdle. So I think we're at a point here where there is potential for the rand to bounce further, but it absolutely would then need to hold the 14 area once it pushes through it. And when we look at what's going on then in the stock market, well, the stock market has certainly in nominal terms been preserved by the weakness of the rand over the last few years, but that was a pretty emphatic upper dynamic that we saw from that psychological 50,000 level last week. Then in Brazil, with a new populist right-wing administration, the Bovespa was at a new all-time high last week and is down a little in here today. But perhaps the more important point is that the real, having rallied ahead of the election, is now giving up some of that advance. This is a very important area here where the dollar is looking like it is starting to return to dominance once more. But 4 to the dollar is the big psychological level for a lot of investors, and if it continues to hold, well, then that is likely to be a rather positive backdrop for the Brazilian stock market. Foreign investors generally like to have currency market and capital market appreciation on their side, and if the real continues to hold that 4 level, well, then that would be rather positive by making Brazil more attractive to foreign investors. Then you have the Turkish lira, which is rapidly unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. I think that it is a bit of an ask to think that it is going to rally much beyond 5 to the US dollar. And if we look at the history of the cross rate, we've certainly had an acceleration. There's no question of that. But every time it has accelerated previously, then we've got periods of lengthy ranging. And it's during those periods of lengthier ranging that can last for anything up to 2 or 3 years that we've generally seen that the Turkish stock market has done better. And once you remove the currency market volatility, that's when foreign investors start to come back in to support the markets because they can obviously see value. So I think we're at a rather interesting environment here where we've certainly had a significant pullback, but most particularly within the technology sector. And even then, the Nasdaq is still hovering here around this 7,000 level. It isn't quite yet been able to push back above it, where this is, I think, the do or die moment here for a significant number of these stock markets, that Wall Street has had a significant pullback in October, and valuations are back where they were in 2016. When we look at the lead indicators for future recessions, well, we're certainly not getting surging oil prices, and high yield spreads are well contained. Unemployment rates are still close to record lows, and credit conditions have tightened up somewhat, but not in an onerous fashion. The biggest threat is the fact that government bond yields look like they are going to move higher from here. And I think that that is what most people are worried about at this stage. Then you have the potential, though, that Europe and China are going to become more friendly to the idea of fiscal stimulus. And European markets were in mostly negative territory in here today, but the Euro stocks was pretty much unchanged. It has got top formation completion characteristics over the course of the last 2 years. It really does need to push back above the trend mean. What's going on in Italy, and there is, I think there is almost a temptation among Eurocrats to just leave Italy alone, and the government will disintegrate on its own. But the Italian stock market remains in a downtrend, and so far the rally we've seen hasn't been especially impressive. There is certainly a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and there's the potential that that is going to be unwound, but it really would need a substantial rally to break that downtrend. And the inability of the banking sector to really put in a significant rally, I think, is true testament to the pressures that are coming to bear, not just on Italy, but in all of Europe. Not re because it's almost every country now where we have some form of a rise of populism, and populism is more of a symptom against of the revolt against the status quo, and that's occurring because people have been disenfranchised, and officials have voted for a decade plus of lower living standards for millions of people, and never really accounted for the fact that people weren't going to stand for it. Well, what that suggests is that we're going to get some form of fiscal stimulus coming through in Europe. Then the bigger question is whether that is going to happen quick enough to offset the I think the negative potential connotations of a quantitative tightening. Then, of course, you have the potential that China, having it's been already tightening for almost a year on the shadow banking sector, and they are beginning to sound more friendly to the idea of fiscal stimulus, and that is also a potential bullish outcome. So we are at a rather delicate period for stock markets, but it's not as if there are no arguments for why we can't see a rebound here. But we do need to see those indices push back above their respective trend means in order to really give that a clear, I think, credibility. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.